Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Ah, good Wednesday afternoon, everybody. AMAC did not tell me I'm hot, which is kind of disappointing. Usually does. Usually whispers sweet nothings in my ear right before the show, which gets me in a fired up mood.
Yeah, I don't think you deserved it today. I don't think you deserved it today.
Oh, man. Look at you coming down hard on me. Oh, man. I tell you, I don't deserve that. Although I did forget that I actually have a radio show to do. I was in with the boss, Drabby, just shooting the you know what, and just kind of forgot that it was 102 and change. And AMAC starts looking. Where does he start looking? In JP and B. Mitch's studio, because that's where I usually am. Instead, I was with the boss. I was like, oh, I forgot I had to do a radio show. Oops, sorry. But nevertheless, we are here, much to your chagrin. I appreciate you guys being with us on this Wednesday afternoon. It's warm out there. By goodness, the traffic is just unbearable. I mean, I've been sitting in it all morning. I had a Phi Sigma Kappa fraternity breakfast meeting at 10 o'clock on Wisconsin Avenue, right there in Chevy Chase, and just getting through the 495 construction. Oh, my goodness. I mean, and then getting over here on Wisconsin and through you know, the government district and wrapping around all the different ways, Rock Creek Parkway and all that. Oh,
yeah, that sounds like even without traffic, that path, just knowing that, like sometimes I go to Georgetown and going past like the monuments and everything.
Yeah.
That path is already, it's weird.
Mercy. I mean, but you know what it is? Like school is getting out, it's out for some. It's not out for some. I saw a couple of schools along the way that were still, kids were in the playground and whatever. Fairfax County is out today. I know that. Today's their last day. It's construction. It's construction season, full blast, you know, and I know it has to get done, but boy, does it suck.
There are road closures for certain parade this weekend, too.
There is, yes. Yeah. Some road closures.
That can add to it as well.
You know what I'm not going to be doing this weekend? Driving in D.C. You know what I am going to be doing? Probably heading to Richmond twice.
There's some roads closed here too, around here, too.
Yeah, I'm not going to be here. Yeah. You know, like you, AMAC, I'm taking a 3-day weekend.
Please invite me to this three-day weekend. I'd love to meet him.
I am not going to be here on Friday. I just confirmed. So you guys are going to be either stuck or blessed with Big L, Linnell Willingham, on Friday. We'll touch on that in just a little bit. But first, look, Commanders minicamp day number 2 is upon us. Dan Quinn already spoke. They had yesterday Jason Garrett, Will Muschamp, among a bunch of high school coaches today. I was listening to Dan Quinn on the way over here, and he was talking about not only player development, but mostly coaches and coaching development and doing things differently and allowing different coaches, like David Blau, the assistant quarterbacks coach, and Tom Donatell, the assistant secondary coach, or whatever he is. Maybe he's the secondary coach. I can't remember. To speak in front of the team and to basically run part of the meeting. And he said, look, year two of this thing, there's less to do in terms of ramping everybody up and indoctrinating everything, everybody into everything. So it allows us to help not only continue to develop our players, the guys that are returning for a second year, the guys that are new here, but also the coaches that returned from year one to year two. We changed around some of their responsibilities and allowing them to do different things to continue their development so that they can perhaps and hopefully move on to be a coordinator somewhere, a head coach somewhere. And as big of a defender, an advocate as I am for the coaches, because people unfairly blame them all the time, and I always point out how many hours and hours and hours they work, right? Even during the off season, they're working 70 hours a week. During the season, it's 100 hours a week. And nobody ever seems to recognize that. Everybody wants the head coach fired. They don't think about all of the other coaches that then either have to find new jobs or have to hope that the new coaching staff takes them on. Some do, some don't. Some don't get new jobs, some do. And you have to uproot your family and you have to completely change everything that you're doing and go into a new atmosphere. And I was thinking about how cool was it that I think Ben Standig asked the question, just that Dan Quinn said, hey, you know what? Yeah, we're trying to develop players and we're trying to continue their rise in the NFL. But also, and most importantly, we're also trying to, perhaps not most importantly, but just as important, we're trying to develop them. And I thought that was a really, really cool thing. And I guess I had never really thought about that. I don't remember thinking about that. I've always rooted for, you know, the guys that were good to me and I thought were bright young coaches. And oh, by the way, I and others were right. We all identified Sean McVay as a future coaching stud. We all did. We all knew it. In 2010, we knew it. He was 22 years old. He just oozed potential and future. Sean freaking McVay. I mean, he barely had hair on his chest. And he's gone on to win a Super Bowl, be in a Super Bowl, makes the playoffs pretty much every year, and has done more by the age of 30 than most of us do in a lifetime. Sean freaking McVay. We all knew it. And the Commanders slash Redskins did allow him to develop. Remember, when Mike Shanahan was fired, Sean was one of the only coaches to remain that didn't get fired immediately and didn't get caught up with the Shanahan clan. Because Matt LaFleur did, and Mike McDaniel did. And, of course, Kyle did, and Chris Foerster did. But they kept Sean McVay. Why? Because Bruce Allen knew Sean McVay even before he came to Washington. So he said, there's something there. And it was about the only smart thing Bruce Allen did in his 10 years of running the organization. About the only thing, smart thing. That's it. There weren't many other things. There weren't. But one of them was keeping Sean McVay, and they allowed him to develop and develop, and he was named the offensive coordinator under Jay Gruden, but he didn't call plays right away. But Jay, in his first year at the helm, allowed Sean to grow. And I think it was, I remember, I don't know, week four of that year, somewhere in that range, I think we were in Philadelphia, and Cooley pointed out because he was doing the broadcast then. And he's like, you know, I think Sean's calling the plays. And you look over at the call sheet and Sean's covering his mouth and he's calling the plays. And sure, you know, so they had allowed him to develop through the offseason. He had been on the coaching staff for 4 or 5 years at that point. But the point being is, and then soon enough, after the 2016 season and back-to-back prolific offensive years for Kirk Cousins and then the Redskins, Sean gets, before he's even 30, the head coaching job of the Rams. And not a soul around here was surprised that Sean was head coach. Maybe a year early, but not a soul was surprised about that. So developing coaches, in Dan Quinn's words just a little while ago, was and is a part of the recipe of success this year. Now, fans might not want to hear that. Fans might not care about that, and they probably don't. I mean, you probably don't care if Jason Simmons, who works with the corners, develops professionally. Maybe you should, because theoretically, the better coach he becomes, the better coach he is for the team and for the players, right? I mean, that's how it kind of works. But I just thought it was refreshing. He talked about, did Dan Quinn the offseason of Cliff and Joe Witt and Larry Izzo. And he said, you know, Joe Witt came to him and said, we got to find a way to do some things differently. We got to have the defensive line group work more together and do this and do that. Remember, they subtracted Jonathan Allen. They subtracted Dante Fowler. They added Dietrich Wise. They added Javon Kinlaw. They added Eddie Goldman and others. And then today, Larry Izzo's troops got a little bit of a boost. Jeremy Reeves agreed to a contract extension. So that's great. I mentioned what Quinn specifically mentioned was Tom Donatell and David Blau, two of the young assistants, one on offense, one on defense. Donatell with the defensive backs, Blau with the assistant the assistant quarterbacks coach, addressing the team, kind of getting that opportunity to run part of a meeting. Again, professional and not only player development, but coaching development. I think that's important. I think that's cool. And it's one of the things that people that I trust very much, okay, two specific assistant coaches in the NFL currently that just were chirping my ear off about Dan Quinn. And I was always a big fan of Dan Quinn back in the Legion of Boom days, Seattle. I loved what he did with Dallas. They were on the right path in Atlanta, and then unfortunately it didn't fall apart right away. They made the playoffs the next year after the Super Bowl, but then it started quickly kind of falling apart, and by 2020 he was fired. But it was one of the reasons why I championed Dan Quinn so hard a year and a half ago is because people that I trust not only said, hey, like Dan Quinn would be a good fit there, but they explained Dan Quinn would be an awesome fit there, and here's 10 reasons why. And one of them was people development. Right? And that means everybody, players, coaches, staff, giving people opportunities to do different things, learn different roles. And if you don't think that matters, if you don't think that helps culture and that helps brotherhood, then you don't understand the world. When people are empowered, when people are given opportunities to figure things out, to do things, to feel like they're being heard, to feel like they made an impact, they are then empowered to do more and better. Like, okay, for instance, let me use a quick example. I bust A-Max chops nonstop. It's for the show. Like, I'm not really a jerk. I'm not a jerk to you, am I?
Well, it's like, no, just joking. No, no, you're not.
Thank you. But you know already that I depend on you. I count on you. You're a big part of the show, even with your built-in three-day weekends. But the point being is I could either be like, oh, hey, no, 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 I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do this, I'll do that, and keep him out of it and just hope that he follows along, or I can empower him to help me bring a better show. That doesn't mean you guys are going to love everything, but like this morning, he just texted and said, hey, I sent you a couple of things of sound. Do you think it fits? Right? And because he thinks it fits. He thought it would be interesting, but he wants to know what I think. But I trust him enough to know that, like, he wouldn't just be pulling something out of his bippy. Like, he thinks it'll work, and we can get something out of it. And we'll hear it later on. But the point being is, he feels, after what, just a month or so of working together?
Yeah, something like
that. You know, you feel like you can come to me and say, hey, I think we should do this, or I think we should do that. You're empowered because you know I'm not going to jump down your throat. You know I'm not going to say, nah, you know, I don't think that's a good idea. Or if I didn't, I'd say, well, you know, maybe we could do something different, or I'm not sure how to incorporate, whatever. The point being is, that's what Dan Quinn's doing. And I'm not saying I'm Dan Quinn, for God's sakes, right? I'm not trying to build a brotherhood here. But we have to have some sort of trust, right? We have to have some sort of belief in each other to not only bust each other's chops, but also to do what's best for the show. And that's exactly what Dan Quinn is doing. And when you're coming off of a 12-win season and two playoff wins, it certainly is easier to do that, but you still have to do it. You still have to do it. And if you don't do it, people are going to get frustrated. People are going to feel like they've hit the ceiling, that they can't grow anymore. And they're going to start to look to get out. So kudos to Dan Quinn. Just something that I heard in his press conference in an otherwise innocuous question that didn't mean anything to me at the time. And then I started thinking, oh, yeah, that's why this guy's so successful. That's why this organization exploded positively, grew. That's why things are heading in the right direction. And I guarantee you, if you talk privately or publicly to every single one of those coaches, they all feel like they're a part of something special. And they all feel like they're growing. Not shrinking. Not staying medium. Not having hit the ceiling already. But they all feel like they're getting bigger and better. And more important. And more experience. So kudos to Dan Quinn. I wanted to start off the show that way on a positive note because, you know, we often get accused of not starting shows and being too negative and half empty and all that. Coming up, we will have to get to a negative, but there was a positive as well in it. I'll explain on the Nationals next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, You can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Jeff McNeil leads off. First pitch, swung on, line drive, base hit toward the right field line. Rounding third, Acuna up with it is Hassel. Throw to the plate, offline, too late, and one pitch is all it took. The game is over, and the Mets have come from behind to beat the Nationals here in game one of this series.
A disappointing end to last night's festivities in Flushing for the Washington Nationals as they lose, as you just heard Charlie Slows describe, on the Nats Radio Network and 106.7 in Odyssey. A crushing, crushing might be strong. It's a Tuesday night in early June. But a tough 5-4 loss in 10. To the Mets, in which they had a 4-2 lead going to the bottom of the eighth inning. And you blow a two-run lead on the road against the division's best team and a team that you're trying to beat and get to and match, and you feel like it's not only a loss, but it's a double gut punch. You know, it's not just a 6-1 loss on a Monday night when nobody's paying attention. It's not the end of the world, but it feels like more than just a loss. At least for me it did. Especially when you throw your ace out there and you have an early 1-0 lead. And an early 2-0 lead. Then you get another run in the second inning. And then you have the 4-2 lead going into the eighth. But when it's all said and done, you realize not only did we ask our bullpen to do too much, which is very clear, but also we only got one run in the final eight innings. And again, that happens in baseball sometimes. I got it. But like when you score three runs in the first two innings, including a Natty Lowe two-run home run, and C.J. Abrams finally wakes up. You think, or at least I thought, right, that they would do more damage. And basically from the time that Jose Tena gets thrown out at home on the C.J. Abrams RBI double, and they scored the one run to make it 3-0, and from the time that Tena is thrown out at home trying to score that extra run with two outs, they only scored one more run the rest of the way, and that was a C.J. Abrams home run. Again, C.J. Abrams was great last night, finally snapping out of it. But you got to score more than one run over eight innings on the road against a lineup as good, as deep, as potent as the Mets. And you can't probably ask your bullpen to get the amount of outs that they had to get. They had to get 9 outs in regulation, and then obviously you need to get another couple of outs in the 10th inning. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a timeout. We'll do the trending alert. Then we'll come back. I got a special guest, but I want to tee it up because he's very angry. He's very hostile. I might be blowing this up a little bit, as I normally tend to do.
I mean, I think it's right up your alley.
You think so?
Yeah.
What, blowing something out of proportion?
Yes.
Making something seem like it's not? It is when it's not? Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay.
You got it.
All right. We'll see. We'll see how angry he is. But he attacked me in the hallways, and he had a big grin on his face. He said, I want to tear into the Nationals. Oh, like a tiger through a steak. We'll tell you all about it next. After a trending alert on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, they're back at it finally on the court tonight in Indianapolis as the NBA Finals resume after a long three-day sojourn from Oklahoma City to Indiana. Series tied 1-1. Tip just after 8:30 Eastern time tonight in Indiana again. Series tied at 1-1 between Oklahoma City and the Pacers. Meanwhile, the Mavericks have joined in denying the New York Knicks the opportunity to speak to Jason Kidd. They join their cross-state rivals, the Houston Rockets, in denying Ime Udoka, and the Knicks apparently tried to reach out to Chris Finch, the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. All three teams have denied the Knicks, correctly, permission to talk to their current head coach. And Kevin Durant, he's been often rumored as being on the move. Well, apparently his business partner and Durant and the Phoenix Suns weighing after meeting multiple times over the past week, weighing potential draft trade scenarios this summer, as teams that are reportedly interested are the Rockets, the San Antonio Spurs, the Miami Heat, the Timberwolves, and said New York Knicks. Nats try and get back at it. We just started talking about them after a tough extra inning walk-off loss in New York last night. They will take on the Mets once again, 7:10 first pitch. Over on 106.7, the Fan, Nats now 6 games under .500, taking on the first-place Mets, and they'll need a better start out of Jake Irvin than they got last time. Irvin is 4-5-2 with a 4.02 ERA. He'll be opposed by David Peterson, and that's what's trending.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Here's C.J. Abrams. Good night for C.J. A pair of doubles. A run scored, a run batted in. The pitch. Swing a line drive deep left center field. Chasing back Nimmo to the track. He leaps at the wall. He can't get it. And this one is gone. It is over the wall for a homer. To left center field, C.J. Abrams, a line drive homer. Makes it 4-2 Nationals. That's number 9 on the season.
All right, C.J. Abrams with the home run. Dave Jagler on the call there. And C.J. had the RBI double in the second that we were referring to, in which they lost a run, as usual, on the base paths after scoring the third run. And also, obviously, had the double to lead off the game to set up Natty Lowe's two-run home run. The Nationals lose 5-4 in 10 innings to the New York Mets. So I offered this opinion after the game. They blew a 4-2 lead. They lost 5-4 in 10. They can hang with just about anybody, whatever you define as hang with, right? They can punch a couple of guys back. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Cubs, but they were in that series, right, for the most part. Not fully, but they were there. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Rangers. Okay, again, it's gotten a little bit away from them as their offense struggles for consistency, but earlier in the year they beat the Dodgers 2 out of 3. They should have swept them. They've, again, hung tight, beat the Diamondbacks 2 out of 3. You get the point. They split a 4-game series earlier with the Mets at Nationals Park. The Nationals can hang with a lot of these teams, but in order to get to a certain level that the Cubs are now at, that the Dodgers have been at, that the Mets are now at, that the Phillies have been at, they're going to have to figure out a way not to lose games like last night. Whether that's getting more out of Mackenzie Gore, whether that's getting more than one run in the final 8 innings, whether that's not getting constantly thrown out on the base paths, whether that's improving their defense, certainly their bullpen, certainly their starting rotation outside of Mackenzie Gore, you get the picture. They're going to have to figure out a way to take the next step. They can hang. They can contend. They often fall apart a little bit. So when I walked into the building today, I was approached by one of our young bucks around here, Ben Strober. Now, you might know the name. You might know the name. He is very prestigious. He is the voice of Maryland Athletics. He is the new host of the Locked On Wizards podcast. And he's one of our, again, young bucks around here. And as I bring Ben in, and you can follow him, Ben Strober Media, I know you to be a very nice, chatty guy. You know, very polite, excitable. You've got a passion. I can see it just in multiple conversations. But boy, was I like, whoa, when you when you tore into the stake that is known as the Nationals Development Plan, you were a little bit salty.
Yep. I tore into AMAC even worse before you got here. And he was like, save this for the Rooster.
Yeah.
He'll love
it. Yeah, of course. Of course. AMAC wants to dodge all the bullets. AMAC doesn't want to hear anybody's crap.
It was just baseball. It's like,
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Baseball's boring.
I think he was entertained, though, because of how passionate and frustrated I was. He was like, okay, I'll listen because this is just entertaining. I don't even care about the baseball part.
What are you so frustrated about? Is it the pure wins and losses? Is it a loss like last night, which, again, they should have won? They had their ace on the mound. A bunch of things go wrong ultimately. They lose to a better team. Like, what is it exactly that's bothering you?
It's top to bottom. Everything with the Nationals organization
right now.
What
are you, Ken Rosenthal Jr.?
Well, I'm not quite. The timing of that piece is still questionable in my mind, but there's a lot of points that are made in there that are valid, and Mike Rizzo did admit that later on in his interview with the Junkies, but I don't even want to get into necessarily that aspect of it right now, because last night felt like a season-defining loss for this team, because they have lost so many games in that way where they have blown the lead late. They fail to hit when Mackenzie Gore is on the mound. I was there a week ago when they do defeat Chicago 2-0 with Mackenzie Gore on the bump after tossing in an absolute gem.
And he started that game in
first
big
three
time trouble.
Singles, and then he doesn't allow a hit the rest of his start, and only two runs to show for it the entire game. That's become a continuing trend when Mackenzie Gore is on the bump. That is your ace. He is a top five pitcher in the National League right now, easily, maybe baseball. And it's not translating to wins because the team doesn't hit well enough. And how am I supposed to take a team seriously that can't do the little things? They consistently run into outs on the base paths. They play terrible defense. They have a catcher that's one of the worst defensive catchers in recent memory in baseball now.
Well, let me stop you right there on that note. And you're not wrong, right? So my friends at Talk Nats put up this last night, the defensive chart, right? You saw this?
Yep.
Where I'm trying to pull it up just so I make sure I have. They had a fielding run value alignment last night of, I think it was, I can't pull up the actual number, but it was like minus 18 or something like that. The only positive fielding alignment run value player in the defensive lineup last night was Nathaniel Lowe at a plus one. Robert Hassel was a zero. James Wood was a minus one, but he threw somebody else out. Where was it? At second last night? Was it second or third? I can't remember. So he and that's a couple now in the last couple of innings or in the last couple of weeks. So, like when you mention they can't do the little things right, we know how bad their base running has been for years. Whether that's just being too over aggressive, whether that's being reckless, whatever, it's always been a problem around here. Way back to when they were in winning divisions and all that, they had Bob Senley, right?
Yeah.
Instead of Bob Henley, Bob Senley, because he would always get a guy thrown out at home by being too aggressive. Again, a lot of teams play like that. I got it. But there is risk reward. But your overall point is you're frustrated with the continual nonstop, like hurting yourself. Is that right? Fair?
That's correct right there. Because when you look at the talent that the roster has, there are still plenty of missing pieces. And I'm not saying they're ready to be a playoff team. They're not close to that, in my opinion, right now. However, they do have the talent that if they had gone out and spent on some necessary pieces, a late-inning relief guy or another bat at this point in the lineup, somebody to maybe protect James Wood, because I know last week was a much better night for Lowe, or last night was better for him. He'd been really struggling the past couple weeks.
CJ Abrams too.
Had been struggling a lot until last night, and that's a trend that I noticed with Nationals hitters over the past couple of years. They will go into these very, very long slumps. Is that a developmental thing? Is this something with the current coaching staff in play with Darnell Coles? I mean, the ground ball rate since 2021, one of the most in Major League Baseball. Is that a direct correlation because of what they have going on in the coaching staff? I'm not going to say it's definitive, but I'm very questionable of the current staff that they have in place. I don't think this is the right group to develop young players whatsoever.
And you're talking about the on-field coaching staff, not necessarily Mike Rizzo.
Not necessarily even Rizzo here. I think Davey Martinez and the current staffing, let me get this straight. Love Davey Martinez. He was a magician in his managerial practices in the postseason in 2019. But with the current group, that was the oldest team in baseball on average that year. They had so many great veterans on that team that were able to pave the way and, you know, help some of the young guys, a young Juan Soto on that team who is well beyond his years, of course,
right,
as a baseball player. With the current group that they have right now, they have so many young players that need to develop in order for this team to go anywhere. And I don't think the staff is capable of developing these players. I think they are constantly on a night-in, night-out basis making too many mistakes, and they're not being corrected. And that is what's most troubling for me.
I think the track record is very troubling.
Yes.
I sometimes, although, find myself seriously wondering whether that's just youth being youth, right? I mean, I know this in working with young guys, not just here, but in other parts of my life. And young people all the time, you have to tell them again and again and again.
Oh, yeah. I make mistakes all the time.
And even still, they don't do it, right? Like you said, how old are you?
I'm 21.
You're 21. I mean, you're 21. Jesus.
Yep. I just graduated college.
I mean, that's unbelievable. I'm literally 30 years older than you. God, that's scary.
Youngest in charge movement.
We got a new leader of the youngest in charge movement. Move over, Toby Altizer. Move over, Linnell Willingham. It's Ben Strober to the rescue, baby. Look, I understand the frustration. I am not as down as you. Last night was frustrating. Last night proved to me again, like, they're inching closer to contention, but they're still not there. And then there's another level after that. And in order to get to those two levels, they're going to need to make significant improvements in the little areas, and they're also going to have to spend more money, period.
So one, you know, I've talked about the staff, which I don't think should be around after this year. And I know Davey Martinez has a club option after this season. So if I had to predict, if they don't make the postseason this year, I don't think the Nationals pick it up. But there are so many pessimistic Nats fans out there saying, well, Brandon Hyde got fired because they pitched to James Wood with first base open. Last night, Davey pitches to Pete Alonso with first base open. He's probably going to get an extension because of that. I mean, because that's how doomed Nationals fans are at this point. But I think right now, given the current state of the entire Nationals organization, we need to, as fans, stop tweeting every day saying, why haven't we put out extensions for Mackenzie Gore, CJ Abrams, James Wood? It's not going to happen right now. I still am under the impression right now, even though the team is not for sale, I think they are going to get sold. I don't know if it's going to be they're going to have to lower the price to what maybe someone else, maybe Ted Leonsis, wants for that team. But I think at this point, the Nationals ownership group is not very interested in owning the team right now. And I can't speak for them. I can't. I could be completely wrong on this, but that is my gut feeling. And I think with that being the case, they are not going to add extensions to their books at this point.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up because I don't know, but I feel and have heard rumblings that they would sell the team if you met their price.
That's what's been the case always,
but,
right?
Right, but the problem is their price.
It's too high.
Like it is for probably naming rights to Nats Park, like it is for Jersey, like it was for various different things, is they feel they can dictate everything.
Yes.
Just like they felt like in free agency, everyone will take deferred contracts without interest. No, not everyone. Some.
That's just
not everyone.
It's how they do business.
Yeah, it's a hardline business and negotiation tactic.
Do you remember, I don't know, it probably was a decade ago at this point. I was a young kid, and my dad had told me that the Nationals were interested in exploring selling the naming rights to Nationals Park.
Right.
And it just never happened. So that tells me the Learners, the way they do business, if you don't meet the price they want, they are not willing to negotiate. They are going to essentially keep at it. They're very stubborn in the way they do business in this sense, because if you don't meet their price, they're not going to do the deal, and they're willing to hold out. And that's why the naming rights thing never happened with Nationals Park, the jersey stuff. And also, you know, it's kind of all culminating right here in the team not getting sold.
Yeah, yeah. And the sequence that you're talking about real quickly is in the bottom of the eighth inning when the Nats tie it up, right? They bring in Ferrer. He gets two outs, gets in a little bit of trouble. Soto with the double, right, to make it 4-3. So then you have Soto on second, and you have first base open. They bring in Kyle Finnegan, right? And right away, I think it was first pitch, if I'm not mistaken, Pete Alonso cranks one down the left field line, scoring Soto, and he's out at second on the throw. In that spot, I'm not walking him either. I know it would make some theoretical sense because first base is open. But you're up 4-3 and you just brought in your closer. That's what you bring in your closer for.
Yeah.
I mean, and you don't put...
I brought that up, actually.
In my opinion, the lead runner on first, because Soto's on second, so you have first and second, two out. Then an extra base hit to the gap scores two runs, and then you're down 5-3. Mm-hmm. Now, again, there is risk in pitching to Pete Alonso. He's super hot. He's in fuego, but... problem.
I agree with you from this sense. I kind of more brought it up, I'm just saying, because of how frustrated Nationals fans were. They brought that up as a situation here. But I'm just frustrated right now because I feel like the organization is closer to having to trade Mackenzie Gore and CJ Abrams than they are to being a playoff team at this point.
You can be frustrated, and that's a spicy potato. I might follow that up in the 2 o'clock hour. We got to take a timeout. Can you stay around for a couple more minutes? Because you are the new co-host of the Locked On Wizards podcast, and we got an NBA draft coming up here. So I want to see what you got.
All right,
about the Wizards. A couple more minutes with one of our young lions around here, one of our young bucks, Ben Strober. He's better than AMAC. Just don't tell AMAC that. Don't tell AMAC that.
Wow.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, we'll get out to the calls on the other side of 2 o'clock. We just got 2 minutes here, real quickly, and we're rejoined by our pal Ben Strober, who you can follow on Twitter, X, at Ben Strober Media, and listen to and watch on the new Locked On Wizards podcast. That's right. We talked Nationals because Ben was all fired up about the Nationals' lack of development and all the issues, and certainly made some very, very, very fair points. But you're also the new co-host of Locked On Wizards podcast, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Also, the team has the number 6 overall pick. And I know you're kind of, you know, that's all you can really talk about right now and speculate as to who.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had to walk the pick up to the podium and you're Will Dawkins and you had like secret firsthand knowledge of what number is going to be, what name is going to be on that card today, what would you say is the odds on favorite at least?
The odds on favorite to be there for them at 6 is what you're trying to ask? Or just if they are there?
If they are there, who they would pick. And if they are there is obviously, you know, a guessing game, but
Well, the reports are the Wizards are very confident that there is going to be a high level prospect available for them at number 6, and I tend to agree. For me personally, if Trey Johnson out of Texas is there at 6,
shooter,
I run to the podium
because he can shoot.
Absolutely.
And they don't have anybody that, I mean, Jordan Poole can shoot, but they need somebody probably less defensive oriented, more assassin-oriented.
Yeah, but if he's not there, I think the pick for me, if this guy's even there, because so many projections have him flying up into the top 5, is Kaman Malawach out of Duke, because I think they would be very benefited by a guy that could pair alongside Alex Saar with that size. And this dude is an elite rim protector, and I think he could develop his offensive game into something really nice. I'm all in on defense in this draft if I'm Washington, at least at some point. We had an episode where we talked about this. Trey Johnson isn't as much of a defensive-oriented player. I know his tendencies are a little bit under question, but he scores the ball too damn well for me to be concerned about that. Also, he's got great reach at 6'6". And defense I just view as an effort thing
right. In
the NBA. Almost anybody that's in the NBA, unless you're severely undersized like Isaiah Thomas was on the Celtics in 2017.
Right.
These guys can all play defense. Yeah. You just have to want to do it.
Well, it'll be interesting also to see, again, Bilal Coulibaly and Alex Saar, most known for their defense, who I go a third year in a row, top 10 pick, with a player that emphasizes defense more than offense.
That's why I just think you have two first-round picks here in this draft, and there are some rumblings that Brooklyn at number 8 really wants Jeremiah Fierce out of Oklahoma. And if that's the case, personally, I would trade back, and I would get that 19th pick from him. So you have 18, 19, and then the 8th pick. And I think that opens the doors where you can get an elite offensive player at some point in this draft, and then you get a couple of key pieces, maybe one or two guys that are defensive-focused. Because the way I've looked at it, I've watched these NBA playoffs very closely, the NBA Finals. Look at the way Oklahoma City plays team defense. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's the model.
Defense seems like a foregone conclusion in the NBA at this point, because in the regular season, they don't seem to play it. However, in the postseason, it matters.
Yep.
The teams start to really play defense,
no doubt.
And the best defensive team has been Oklahoma City, and that's why they look like they were in control, especially after last night. It took a collapse against the Pacers in Game 1 to fall. I mean, that's just what the Pacers do, though. That's how they win their games.
No doubt.
I'm not even going to fault them for that. But team defense, I think, is so important. And I think Brian Keefe, as a head coach, has put so much emphasis on that being how they want to mold this thing. Will Dawkins, the same exact thing since coming from Oklahoma City. And I think that's how they have to approach this draft.
Yep, no doubt about it. Good stuff there. Make sure you check out the Locked On Wizards podcast. New co-host Ben Strober. Also, check him out on Maryland broadcast, right? And as well, he's mad about the Nationals. And follow him on Twitter, at Ben Strober Media. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Rooster.
Appreciate you. At Ben Strober Media. We're late for the top of the hour. I'm going to get criticized for that. And that's okay. It's my fault. But we'll take the time out here. We'll come back. We'll reset. We'll hit the phones. And we'll maybe take something from Ben and pitch it to you on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.